Welcome to Crazy Shit in Real Estate, a weekly podcast where I walk you through some of the wildest, most unbelievable stories you'll hear from the world of real estate. If you like real estate and you love crazy, this is the podcast for you.
Thank you for being willing to come on the show.
Oh, absolutely. I love your accent.
You know, it's my get out of jail free card, and I lean into it.
That's great. I've lost my southern accent. I grew up in, we moved around a lot, but I lived in Houston for a while, and I lived in Baton Rouge for my grade school and then college years. No, I didn't skip high school. I'm not that smart.
Well, you know, I wasn't going to ask, because if you were in Louisiana, you were in a parish anyway, so those people are different. All right, so tell us where you're located, Jim. What city are you in, state?
Yeah, right now I'm in Monument, Colorado, which is just north of Colorado Springs and south of Denver.
So are y'all experiencing any of the wildfires that are going on right now?
Not super local, but I mean, yeah, we've definitely had some smoky air the last, it's actually pretty clear today, but our normally super blue skies have been a little more like LA.
Well, you know, that's what happens with forest management. Wildfires happen, as much as they're painful.
It's exactly right. They do. And they're needed, you know, so.
Cycle of life, people.
You got it.
All right, Jim. So you know what happens on Crazy Shit in Real Estate. You know, we like to tell the stories that nobody else tells because it's fun, this crazy space called real estate. So how long have you been in and around real estate?
In and around real estate. Well, I won't give you a snarky answer like we've all been since birth. No, I've been full-time since 1986, the very beginning of 86.
Wait a minute. You came in right about the SNL crisis?
A little early. Yeah. That's right. Yeah. So I worked as an engineer before that in corporate America, and actually got an LSU, graduated from LSU in 79 with an engineering degree, went to work for an oil company. After 6 years, decided the corporate thing wasn't for me, jumped out into real estate full time, and haven't gotten a paycheck from anybody in that many years. So what's that, 34 years I've been there.
You're 6 years away from realtor emeritus status.
Is that what that is?
You know what realtor emeritus status means?
I mean, it probably means 40 years that you've been in real estate, but I haven't been a realtor. So.
Oh, well, see, realtor status at 40 years means no dues to the local board. That's all you have to do is make it 40 years in the association.
Interesting. No, I did not know that. I know that when I hit 70, which is coming up sooner than I like to admit, about 6 years, my lift tickets are free at some of the best mountains. So.
Oh, well, I guess that's good. So, but you'll also have Medicare in case you break something, right?
Yeah, good point. That's right. That's right.
So Jim, in 34 years in real estate, what's your craziest story? So let's pretend we're having a cocktail at the bottom of the mountain. And I say, what's happened to you in real estate? What's the story that you lean into and tell?
Yeah, well, you know, probably how to fail forward. You know, I've had some pretty successful failures in my career, and
like spectacular, like gigantic in the newspaper kind of failures.
No, nothing that would make the newspapers necessarily. Thank God.
Nowadays, you know. They're dying nowadays, so they'll take anything.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, they're desperate. So no, you know, really just losing it all. Like I, you know, in my 30s, I could have retired in my 30s if I jumped out at the right time, and didn't because I wanted to keep building. Everything imploded in the mid-90s for us, the early to mid-90s. And again, I was doing development projects in Southern California. Not a good place to be a small fish in a very big pond, you know, especially everything was pretty much private debt financed. And so when things turn around, I mean, you know, leverage is great when things are going forward, but when they're going backwards, it's a hammer. And so, then I turned around, built back up, kind of focused on affordable housing. Same thing though, doing development ground up, and got ground up. So, you know, the subprime crisis just absolutely, wiped me out. So, you know, losing, you know, significant net worth twice, and then finding myself at 55 years of age with five teenagers under roof, and had moved from California to Kansas City, quite a culture change there. And literally trying to refigure out life. So all I had was my, you know, experience, raw materials, tool belt from real estate. And I saw opportunity everywhere, of course. And it was created from this mortgage crisis. So I realized something that, you know, when you drive through a city, maybe you've heard this, it's kind of become cliche. I'd like to say I was the first person who said it, but I know I wasn't. But, you know, when you drive through a city, you don't see rehabbers or flippers or even builders' names up on the tops of the tallest buildings. It's usually banks. And that was kind of a clue for me. Like, you know, maybe I'm on the wrong side of this debt equation. You know, maybe I need to be figure out how to be the lender and not the borrower. So I discovered purchasing mortgages in 2010 by going to a conference in Denver and then started studying it. And in 2011, I bought my first non-performing mortgages and I was hooked. And by 2012, hooked up with a partner, a guy that I'd known, is kind of a finance guy, and he'd built a big tech business in the 90s. And he knows how to scale and he knows how to do all the back end, the finance stuff. And I just like doing deals. So he goes, you go do deals, I'll raise the money. And, you know, here we are 8 years later. And it turned out it was me and my son working out of the basement of my home in Kansas City. And then this guy that I partnered up with, Bob Frazier, in 2012. And here we are, you know, 8 years later, and we have a, you know, a company. We actually just made we're about halfway in the middle of the Inc. 5,000 fastest growing private companies.
Wow. And,
what I thought was going to be a 2 or 3 year gig has turned into a company, and we have processes and teams and great relationships in our space. And we're doubling every year. I mean, we're killing it and having
a blast. Is your name on a building yet or not yet?
No, we don't have our name on the building, but you know.
Is it going to say Bob and Jim? Because it can't say BJ, because that's going to go the wrong direction altogether.
Billy, Bob, and Jim, yes.
Like, I'm the tackiest person ever. All right, so when you say non-performing mortgage, tell us what you mean about that. So it's headed for default there.
No, this is way past headed for default. This is way past headed for default. The stuff we buy, and we buy, you know, you're going to think we're insane, but we buy junior liens, non-performing second mortgages, like HELOCs and stuff.
You
like
are
that.
Crazy.
Thank you. And we take great pride. Honestly, some of these there hasn't been a payment in 10 years. So the default train left the station, you know, 9 years ago in some of these cases. So we're buying them for, you know, very big discounts typically, you know, but that gives us a lot of room to work with the borrowers, you know, so we really like to create win-win situations. And about 70% of the time we're successful with that. So we usually either negotiate a settlement with the borrower or a loan modification where they can, you know, get into an affordable payment and actually have a view to some equity in their property again. And at the same time, I mean, we're tripling our money for our investors. So, you know, it's a pretty sweet deal.
So are you negotiating that primary lien, or how do you work around the primary lien holder?
No, most of the time the primary lien is actually, this is the beauty, most of the time it's actually still being paid.
They don't care.
We know someone's in the home. We know they care about staying in the home.
Right.
And they're making payments on the first. And we also know we have the right to pursue the collateral if we have to. And we usually have to start that process on maybe 75% of the time. And that might just be a letter from the attorney. First, we reach out friendly, like, you know, send a welcome package and, hey, bet you're glad to hear from us. We own your second mortgage. Remember that one that you took out, you know, 8 years ago or whatever. But a lot of times we don't get responses from borrowers right away. But when they get a letter from an attorney, a whole new batch of them contact us. And the earlier they contact us, the better, because we can work out a better deal with them. And a lot of times we have to start foreclosure. And then they say, well, you can't foreclose. You're only a second lien. So, well, yeah, we actually can. And so, but yeah, but in most cases, to answer your question, the senior mortgage is being serviced by the borrower. So
I love this, that your goal is not necessarily to buy the note and run people off. It's to find solutions. But I could have caught that coming, since you were focused on the affordable housing space for a long time, which means your general sense of optimism is also applied in the general sense of trying to help people. And I think that's a space that nobody really ever talks about. We're looking at defaults and we're looking at notes that are behind, is that there's a humanitarian piece to this, because people love these houses. And how often would you say that 10-year-old note, they were not paying it on purpose, and how many of them it just fell by the wayside in raising kids and they never thought about it again?
Well, you know, the second liens particularly are treated a little differently by the institutions. So they don't, you know, they charge them off. I mean, typically after 90 days. And so then, you know, after a while, the borrower stops getting love letters. And so, you know, maybe they assume, hey, maybe we don't owe it anymore. Well, no, the fact of the matter is the institution just doesn't have the bandwidth to, you know, to come collect it. So it goes into the trash can from the institution's perspective, and we're trash pickers. Hate to say that, but no, that's, you know, it's a problem that needs to be solved, and it's financial chess. You know, I mean, we've built a team of workout people that are all former bank and mortgage people. And they know how to treat people right. They're very up to date on the consumer laws and we're very compliance minded. But we're real people, and we can roll our sleeves up and have a conversation with somebody and work a deal out in a phone call, and then paper it up. And you know, we've eliminated 2/3 of their debt, and we've created a nice profit for our investors. And you know, it works. It's been working. So
at the time that we're recording this, of course, we're still dealing with the global pandemic, and we're dealing with a lot of uncertainty in the financial markets and the mortgage markets, and particularly with liquidity. So are you moving into the space of the people who have been receiving forbearance? And for those of y'all that are consumers who listen, the forbearance process just means people have asked their banks to be forgiven the requirement to pay a mortgage note right now, have it tacked on to the end. So what's happening with our mortgage banks, there's a blind spot developing. There's people who are not paying their notes because they don't have to. They don't have to prove hardship, but the piper always comes a-calling. So I'm curious if you guys are talking to your bigger lender partners about that blind spot, and what are you doing to prepare to help people as we get to the other side of COVID?
COVID, what's that?
You said something. I could call it lots of names, but I'm being nice for my podcast.
No, I'm just kidding. I honestly don't want to belittle something that's really, really a significant thing. Obviously, we have not seen the amount of what we were prepared for, a lot of, a lot of additional defaults, especially on the income side. We have another side of our business where we actually buy reperforming loans where people are making their payments, and we manage that cash flow. And honestly, on both sides of our business, it's probably been less than 20 individuals that have contacted us and asked for some help or relief. There's always people that are out that are going to game the system if the system's available, whether they have a hardship or not.
Of course.
But honestly, we've actually been pretty amazed at the number of people that even could get a forbearance, but are choosing to keep paying their mortgage, because I think, you know, I think you mentioned it before about the paying the piper. Eventually, they just don't want to get behind. Like, why should I get behind? I'm getting a check from the feds. I haven't really lost my job, or maybe I'm sporadic on my job. And hey, as long as I can pay my bills, I think I'm going to continue paying my bills. And, you know, we still live in a great country where people, for the most part, actually believe in paying their bills. And by the way, people actually do want to work. I know there's a lot of talk out there like, we're incentivizing people not to go back to work. Well, there's always going to be a handful of people if that's the case, you know. But for the most part, people want to work and be productive, and they want to pay their bills and stay on top of things and ahead of the curve. And so I'm actually kind of proud of our citizens, you know, going through this and seeing, you know, the level of, you know, of people that really are stepping up. And so we have not been, we've actually had our biggest quarter ever last quarter. And this quarter looks like it's going to be the same. And it's the performance on our cash flow side of our business has not been interrupted. So, I mean, thank God. So
the news there, y'all, is turn off the mainstream media. That ain't
nothing. Oh gosh. You know.
Okay, so Jim, we have a lot of regular consumers who listen to this show and who watch it on YouTube, and they are probably sitting here thinking, holy crap, this is going over my head. Tell me a story, Jim. Tell me a story. So as old as you are with that nice head of white hair, we know you've seen some things in regard to real estate. So I'd love to know the thing you've seen, whether it's related to the money side, sale side, a house you bought with all those teenagers, or something you lost during bankruptcy. What's the situation or a scenario that you've encountered that you said, I can't believe what just happened, and you got to the other side of it?
Okay. Well, one comes to mind. We bought a non-performing second mortgage on a property in California, and the property was worth at the time maybe $750,000. So it was a starter home in California.
A tear down, fixer upper.
Yeah, exactly. No, it was a nice house up in Sacramento area. And anyway, this borrower, she owed like something like $250,000, and I think we had bought this mortgage for $30,000. And you know, we had all kinds of room to make a deal with her, and we started reaching out and trying to, you know, get her to come to the table. Her first mortgage was only about $300,000, so there was even equity above the full payoff on ours. So there's really no reason And she was successful because we do due diligence. We look at people's social media, whatnot, and like, this person can pay her bills. She's just gotten used to not paying it. So, I mean, she's basically flipping us off, you know, by ignoring us, you know. And so so we get a phone call from her father. And the guy is like livid. I mean, and our people that talk to consumers are super friendly, super warm. We're not nasty people at all. And I mean, he's like livid, like, why are you hassling my daughter? You're a predatory, this and that. And we said, well, sir, do you realize, I mean, we haven't received a payment on this mortgage in 7 years. And the phone went just absolutely silent. And he was like, what? We said, no, we haven't. This mortgage has been in default for 7 years. And he said, well, anyway, he kind of started opening up the story that he had given this house to his daughter and his son. And they had an arrangement where the son would take care of, I have no idea how they figured this out, but the son would make the payments on the first mortgage and she was supposed to make the payments on the second mortgage. Go figure. Yeah. And
that's
so
a terrible setup. If you're a parent out there listening, don't do that. No.
Yeah, exactly. Do not do that. Do not do that. So the guy goes, well, I'm going to be with them this weekend and you're going to be hearing from us again next week. And I'm thinking, I'm not sure what we're going to hear from them. Next week, he calls up and says, what's the exact balance that's owed on this mortgage? Well, I think it's $275,000. By the end of the week, we received a wire for $275,000.
Oh, Dad made it right.
Dad made it right all the way too. So anyway, it's kind of a crazy story. You know, we're not really super crazy. So I don't have any real wild ones. You know, we have bought notes on properties that looked really pretty online. And then we had a realtor drive by to give us kind of a CMA on it. And it's like, you do realize there's no house on this lot, right? Said, no, we didn't realize that actually. We're looking online. Oh yeah, that's a 3-month-old picture. Wonder what happened, you know? So we've had crazy stuff like that happen. You know, we buy
houses. How do you do that? How do they trick Google into sticking a house on a fake lot?
You know, I never did figure that one out, you know, whether it was and the address was wrong or, you know, sometimes there can be a fire or a house gets torn down, you know, especially
that's
some of the lower.
California, God bless them. Colorado, God bless them experiencing fires. But yeah. Still, you think you would have heard about that.
Yeah, no kidding. Yeah, you do. So.
So, Jim, you said that you've learned a lot in life by failing forward. You got to give our people a little bit of a life lesson from Jim about what they should do if they're feeling really lost and don't know what to do next, because all I get from you is this general sense of it's going to work itself out. You're very optimistic. Kind of reminds me of our amazing president with this. It's going to work itself out.
Yeah. Well, you know what? I'll tell you my, you know, first and foremost, my faith informs everything that I do in life. So that's my core. You know, people in the fitness world talk about you got to build your core. Well, to me, if you know, I would say to your listeners, if you haven't worked on your interior life, and to me, that's my faith in God, that's the place to start, you know, that makes the most sense. So I can't be a negative person. I can't be I'm a realist. I mean, I know there's problems. In fact, I love problems. Problems are what we get to work on and fix. And so a lot of times the problem's me, it's the person in the mirror. And so there's a lot to work with there. A lot I can fix. So, you know, I really do believe that the way the system, if I can call it the system of life, is built, there really is a reward for solving problems in a legitimate way. If you apply yourself in an area that you have a passion in, and then you go get the skills, you know, we do have to learn a skill set and develop yourself in it. Unless you just pick something that's so such a stupid idea to begin with, you know. And by the way, some of the stupidest ideas, quote unquote, have made people billionaires. But that said, you know, find something that your heart really comes alive about, and something also that you have a little bit of knowledge or are willing to go get the knowledge, and then talk to some people around you that know you, and their only motivation is they love you and they care for you. And I'm not talking about the people that'll, for decades, I heard, why don't I go get a real job? And those of you in real estate or considering it or entrepreneurs, we've all had the friendly family member that's like, why don't you get a real job? My response is, I don't say it, but I'm thinking under my breath, why don't you get a real life? But, you know, I would never say something that snarky. But that said, you know, talk to the people that have some knowledge, but that know you and care about you. And just vet your idea. Say, do you think this is a good match for me? And do you think this is a legitimate thing to go after? And, you know, and then go find people, mentors in the space. Find somebody that's already doing what you want to do. And, you know, there's a saying out there that the best way to learn is from your mistakes. I disagree with that. I think that's the second best way to learn. I think the first best way to learn is from my mistakes. You can learn from my mistakes. So what I mean by that is find a mentor. If I had to talk to somebody about what I was doing in Southern California and just sat down and had them explain to me, like, you know that within real estate, you can actually build wealth a more conservative way where everything isn't riding on what's the California real estate market doing at the point in time when you start your project. I didn't realize it. I thought I was a developer. Well, I really wasn't. I was a speculator. I was an unintentional speculator, because if you start a project that's going to take you 3 or 4 years to finish, you have no idea what the market's going to look like when you're making the commitment on the front end of that. And you're hoping somebody shows up when you lift the curtain and you unveil your wonderful product that there's no buyers for anymore. It's a terrible thing. So if somebody just told me that simple lesson, 30 years ago, I probably could have saved me some of this, but hey, it's all part of life. So you take what you've learned, the good, the bad, and the ugly, and then you go forward based on that knowledge, and you get redirected and keep hoping, keep believing. And I can't be pessimistic. I've lost the ability to discern half empty glasses. There are no such thing as half empty glasses.
That's okay. The quote that I wrote down, though, as while I was sitting here writing, was that you said problems are what we get to work on. I love that perspective. Yeah. That's going to have to be attached to this episode somewhere so you people can go share it and feel positive after hanging out with Jim. Jim, if they want to learn more about you and what you're doing out there, what's the best way for people to get in touch with you?
We have a website. It's aspenfunds.us, and that's aspenfunds.us. And I'd be happy to direct anyone who's interested in how to get involved in the mortgage space. We do have funds that, all of our investors, private investors and some institutions, accredited investors only. If anyone wants to get started in the notes world, I can direct you to some people that do educating. We're not educators. We don't have a 997 home study course, but I can point you to some people
not
that
yet.
Do, and they're actually not yet, and they're pretty good at it. So, we're pretty open-handed about sharing with people and helping them kind of maybe find their path. So.
Well, thank you for coming on the show and giving my viewers and listeners a whole different thing to think about in regard to real estate, because it's one of the things I love about this space. You never know which angle you're going to wind up in, because it's got so many different avenues and opportunities.
No doubt about it. So good.
All right, guys, make sure you subscribe for more. Give us 5 stars and we'll see you next time. By the way, all of Jim's information's in the show notes. I know y'all didn't write anything down. Don't worry. Just click and learn. Jim, best to you, and I look forward to seeing you in the future.
All right, Lee. Thank you very much. Same.
If you are listening to this episode and you need to tell us something about your crazy life in or around real estate, then tweet me at Lee Brown or reach me on any of the social networks. That's if you're a broker, realtor, investor, inspector, lender, or just a regular, normal human being who happens to have dealt in real estate. Subscribe for more episodes. And as always, we are thrilled that you joined us for some crazy shit in real estate. See you next time.